This week, Holy Week, is such a rich time of life in the church. It seems to naturally move us to do more. It's not simply an ordinary day when we get up and go through our ordinary routines. Even our pondering of the scriptures, which we do every day, as it seems to ask us to do more. And that's why in Holy Week, at least here in the Philippines, where Catholicism has so deeply influenced the culture, there's all sorts of devotions and practices associated with this week. Many people go to their home provinces, but there are many, processions and devotions. Here in the parish, there was a pabasa. I was surprised last night to learn that we were assigned to the 11 p.m. hour. I don't know if anyone made it. But they had the pabasa from the chanting of the Passion from 3 o'clock yesterday until 6 o'clock this morning. So all night long. It's a beautiful way of saying this week is a time to focus on the Passion. And then if you go to any parishes or any chapels, you know that people are preparing their carroza, or what do they call those carriages? Carroza? Carroza. There's a lot of Spanish terms that come up this week that I don't know, so I'm sorry. But then there's people who are responsible for those, like the guardians of the different images they have. There's a Spanish name for that too. And these people come out of the woodwork. I don't know where they are all year, but they show up with images of saints I've never heard of, and then they have these carroza, and then flowers and devotion. And then, of course, the Santo Entierro procession is being prepared even now, and different aspects of the stations or ways to pray, ponder the stations of the cross. People are preparing for their salubong processions. I know up in Pampanga and Tarlac, there are people scourging themselves and carrying crosses around, dragging crosses through the streets. And also lots of little communities have pabasa, sometimes more than 24 hours, sometimes days long, chanting of the Passion. In our own community, today is traditionally the day we make our visita iglesia. I realized last night when I looked at the readings, I said, I don't know if I've ever had this mass in the Anuam Chapel, because for years we have used Tuesday of Holy Week to make our visitation of the seven churches and all over, at least Luzon. But we, because this year, being our anniversary year, we made a special pilgrimage to Cebu a couple of weeks ago. So instead of our visita today, we did it a couple of weeks ago in Cebu. Well, in the liturgy, I've been speaking about popular devotions, and I say, and kind of a spontaneous desire to do more, to reap the benefit of this rich week. But the liturgy also has lots of richness to it. In the old liturgy, there was a period of Lent known as Passiontide, started on the fifth Sunday. So 2 weeks of Passiontide. And the Passion would have been read on the fifth Sunday. I'm not sure about the sixth Sunday, which is Palm Sunday. I don't remember, and I don't have any memory of this, but I've been told different things. And then in Holy Week, the different Passion accounts would be read every day. Monday, Matthew's version. Tuesday, today, would be Mark's version of the Passion. Then on Wednesday, Luke's version of the Passion. John's version of the Passion is always reserved for Good Friday. Now, we don't follow that tradition now, but it's clear that the church wants us to keep reflecting on the Passion. Part of what the church does now, and I don't know if this was done in the liturgy before the revisions, what the church does now is it picks out these servant songs from the prophet Isaiah. There are four sections of Isaiah's book of Isaiah, which speak about this servant of the Lord, the Ebed Yahweh, they call him, the servant of the Lord, who has a special role in introducing the reign of God, and has a strange suffering quality to him. Now, so there's four songs. The first one we reflect on Monday of Holy Week. The second one today. So the first one is at Isaiah 42. Today, Isaiah 40, is it 49? The second of the songs. Tomorrow we read the third one, Isaiah 50, which actually we also read on Sunday, although people don't pay much attention to those other readings when we read the Passion and the story of the Jesus entry into Jerusalem. There's so much to reflect on. But this year, year C, we actually read the third of the servant songs on Sunday. And then tomorrow we'll read it again. And then the fourth song, which is the longest and the richest, is reserved for Good Friday. That's the part in Isaiah 52 and 53 where this servant is clearly someone who suffers on behalf of the people. By his wounds, we are healed. He's the one scourged. He's the one who does the suffering, and we gain the benefit of it. It's clearly prophetic preparation for what we celebrate on Good Friday. Well, so these are all liturgical approaches. Now let's just ponder a little bit today's gospel, again taken from John's gospel. It's good to look at the different versions of the Passion, different accounts, because they all have little variations. Yesterday, we were told that Judas's problem was that he was a thief. He was taking the money. He was greedy. He was focused on money. John's gospel doesn't mention Judas's problem with money. It says that he kept the money bag, but it doesn't indicate that his problem was greed. This will come up again tomorrow. But in today's gospel, what's clear is the activity of Satan, who comes on the scene at this very striking moment, at the Last Supper, the holy moment of the Passover Supper of Jesus and his disciples. And Jesus announces that one of his own disciples is going to betray him. They say, well, who is it? And then Jesus tells the beloved disciple, it's the one whom I will give this special portion of the Passover meal, this morsel. He gives it to Judas. It says, after Judas took the morsel, Satan entered him. So Satan is the antagonist, I don't know what to call him, the agent who's making this thing go sour. And Judas seems to be simply an agent of Satan. Yes, he's an evil man. Judas is an evil man. But he's also under the influence of a much more powerful evil agent, and that is Satan. And once Satan enters him, then Judas goes out to do the betrayal. Now, in Matthew's gospel, as we read about tomorrow, Spy Wednesday, we'll see that Judas takes the initiative to go and ask how much he can get for Jesus. So that was as if to say Judas's own problem. Here, the emphasis is on Satan's initiative. But when Judas goes out, it says it was night. It was night. Indication of, yes, the hour of the day, but also the spiritual condition of anybody who's in the grip of Satan. Darkness, interior darkness. At this very moment of the announcement of the reign of Satan and of the darkness, Jesus says this, "Now is the Son of Man glorified." It's a very stark contrast. It's night. It's night in Judas's heart. The betrayal is about to take place. This is Thursday evening. The Passion is just about to begin, and Jesus announces, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him." He speaks about glory, glory. Jesus' understanding of what's going on here is completely different than anyone else's. He's taking on the role of the servant. He's fulfilling the prophecy of the one who will suffer on behalf of others. He wants to do this. He knows this gives glory to the Father. His flesh resists it, of course, because no human nature wants to suffer. But his determination is to do the will of the Father perfectly. And that glorifies God. And it also glorifies him. In fact, it gives glory to everybody. Glory is unleashed through this perfect obedience of the Son. Okay, after saying that, and then there's a couple of verses skipped over here. I was surprised to discover this, the place where Jesus says, they will know you are my disciples by your love for one another. It's a famous line of Jesus, and it's right here in John 13, but it's skipped over here. Maybe because in Holy Week, the disciples' love for one another is not very evident. They all betray Jesus. They all run away. They have no love for him or for anyone else. They're thrown back into their self-preservation. So anyway, that verse is skipped over. But then the gospel turns to the conversation with Peter. Jesus is announcing he's going to go away. This is the moment. The hour has come. And Simon says, "Well, where are you going? Where are you going?" Simon never quite gets it, but he wants to get it. He's sincere, but he lacks self-knowledge. And so he boldly says, "Well, I'll go wherever you go. I'll go. I'll die with you." No, you're not going to go somewhere without me. And that's what Jesus has to, not out of spite, but to give him self-knowledge. "You're going to deny me three times before this night is even over. Before the cock crows in the morning, you will have denied me three times." Certainly that would have pierced Peter's heart, and he resisted it. I mean, he didn't even believe it. But within a few hours, it actually happened. Now, what does this tell us? Peter is not under the domain of Satan here. He's not in the reign of darkness. He's in weakness. Part of it is simply ignorance. He doesn't really know himself that well. He doesn't know the limits of his strength, and none of us knows that. But there's also a bit of arrogance. He thinks he's stronger than he really is. He is still relying on his human strength. And that's what's going to leave him vulnerable. He puts himself in a situation where he's going to be asked if he's a follower of Jesus or not. It's what we would call an occasion of sin. He puts himself in a position where he's going to have to stand up for the Lord, and he doesn't have the inner strength to do it. He does love the Lord. He wants to follow him, but he's a fearful man. He's a weak man. And that comes up as we get into the Passion. We know he's afraid to announce his discipleship even to a servant girl, even to the least threatening of witnesses. What we learn from Simon then is our own weakness. It's a kind of exposure of what we're really like. Yes, we're faithful. Yes, we love the Lord. Yes, we want to follow him to the cross. I mean, it's Holy Week. We're as sincere, hopefully, as Peter is, but we should know also we can't do it. Not simply by relying on our own strength and our own conviction. We're weak. And we're also foolish, ignorant, full of ourselves, not aware of the circumstances around us very well. We want to impress others. We don't want people to dislike us. And all these things are going on all the time. So what we're told here is, Be aware of your own limitations. Don't think that you can march through the Passion and come out glorious. Better to say, "Lord, give me the strength. Lord, help me. Lord, change my heart." In other words, rely on the strength that comes from God. And then, yes, nothing's impossible for someone who relies on God. Someone who has this poverty of spirit, people with poverty of spirit, can really persevere. As we will see on Good Friday, the only ones at the cross are the poor. And Peter's not one of them. Mary, of course, the queen of the poor, Mary, who knows how to rely on God in every circumstance and in every contradiction. Mary. Yes. Well, actually, we're all hidden behind this purple cloth. But you know these people at the cross and how they remain there. They remain there in their poverty. John, the beloved disciple, because he's there with the Blessed Mother. And then the other women, who are not full of themselves and who are not proclaiming themselves to be faithful, they're just moved by love and forgetful of themselves. So these things give us plenty to ponder. Keep reflecting on the Passion. Keep reflecting on the various characters that show up during these days. If you can enter into the devotions of the day, the processions, the readings, do so. Do something to enter more deeply into this, because this is what will give us awareness of what's going on and also how we can better participate in this glorious work of our salvation.